Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Founders Insights. Today we're doing something new. We're sharing my screen. So I do apologize if you're watching this on your podcasting software. I will try to make it as audio only friendly as possible, but just know that I am sharing my screen. And if you'd like to follow along, you can do so on our YouTube channel. All these videos and podcasts are posted on our YouTube channel. So if you just go onto YouTube and put in Lone Star Capital, Rob Beardsley, Founders Insights, this will come right up. So today what we're focusing on is our underwriting process. And that's why we have the underwriting model that we use day in, day out to analyze tons of deals here in front of you. And here we're just using an example deal. This was a high profile deal in Houston that we were a finalist bidder on, and unfortunately we weren't awarded. So I think it's a good deal to talk about since it was public and it's a very well-known deal given its prime location, prime vintage, and it was a very competitive bidding process here. And so I want to walk through some of the factors that are different in today's environment as far as how we're underwriting. And obviously, I can't take the time to walk through our full underwriting process. There's plenty of videos that we've done in the past that you can find on our YouTube channel that go over that. You can also check out my book, The Definitive Guide to Underwriting Multifamily Acquisitions on Amazon, if you'd like to really get the step-by-step guide. So specifically, we're talking today about what is different today in our underwriting process from before, from kind of our basic standard underwriting process. I think the biggest one, just to jump right into it, is the exit cap rate. This is a controversial one because the conventional wisdom for exit cap rates is to expand the exit cap rate from entry around 10 basis points per year, or just a flat 50 to 100 basis points, depending on how conservative you want to be. And this is good conventional wisdom that I subscribe to. However, with the tweak being that it's not 50 or 100 basis points of expansion off of your entry cap, it's off of where the market is. You shouldn't be underwriting a more aggressive exit cap rate because you're entering at a more aggressive cap rate. Specifically, what I mean, and this is very common, a common mistake found in value add deals, because when you buy a value add investment, you're buying at a compressed cap rate because you're paying the seller for the embedded upside that there is in doing the value add deal. Then on the back end, presumably when you sell that property in 3 to 5 years, you're selling a stabilized product because you yourself have implemented the value add and that upside no longer exists. Therefore, you have to sell at a stabilized cap rate or a higher cap rate to entice a buyer, the new buyer, into the deal. And that's where people might be buying a compressed cap rate of 4.5%, thinking they can then project an exit at 5%, and that's conservative, when in reality, the market cap is 5%. So they're actually not doing any conservative cap rate expansion for their exit. So that's the general conventional wisdom when it comes to underwriting your exit cap rate. And I'd like to really stress that exit cap rates are much more of an art than they are a science. I think nerding out in the specifics of what is the exact exit cap rate is a fool's errand, because it is by far the least knowable factor in your underwriting. It's less knowable than your pro forma rents, because you can do rent comps to figure out your pro forma rents. It's less knowable than your expenses, because you know what you can operate the property at from an expense perspective. And it's less knowable than growth expectations as far as organic rent growth over the next 3 to 5 years. You can use data services to project that. You can use population growth, supply, and things like that. But the reason why I say exit cap rates are the least knowable is because, one, it is a future assumption that is usually 3 to 5 years down the road. So something that's further out into the future is less knowable than something that's less further out into the future. And also, it is just a factor dependent upon interest rates in 5 years, buyer demand in 5 years, where that specific market is in 5 years. So there's so much that is unknowable. However, it is a very sensitive input. If you tweak the exit cap rate a little bit here and there, it can dramatically alter the projected returns from the deal, which is why people stress it so much. And it's kind of the go-to spot to get aggressive in order to make a deal look better than it otherwise would. But with all those disclaimers being said, the controversial thing that we're doing and that many other buyers in the market are doing today in order to be successful is actually the opposite of conventional wisdom, which is underwriting cap rate compression, right? That's usually a no-no. That's usually a red flag. But in today's environment, it is arguable that underwriting cap rate compression is the smart thing to do. We've seen cap rates expand dramatically, and we believe that we are at a cyclical high in cap rates. So if you're buying today, you're buying at a relatively high cap rate than the last couple of years, and likely the next few years out into the future as well, which bolsters the argument for cap rate compression. Now, of course, I'm not saying go crazy with it and get high on your own supply and go crazy with your exit cap rates and make every deal pencil to a really attractive return, right? That's not the goal here. But the goal here is to rationalize and make sense of the buying opportunity in today's market. And that's kind of where the art rather than science comes into this. Because on a practical level, on a philosophical level, many of the deals that we're looking at in today's environment, they look attractive. You can wrap your arms around the deal. You're buying at a 20% or 30% discount from what the deal was worth 2 years ago. That feels good. You're buying at a good price per pound. And what I mean by that is a good price per door and a good price per square foot. That feels good. Just as an example, to finally actually use the spreadsheet that we're staring at here, the purchase price here is $198,000 per unit. Now, you don't know necessarily the specifics of this deal, but the replacement cost on this deal is somewhere around, let's say, $275,000 per unit. That's because the land value is very high and it's high grade construction. Well, buying a 2016 vintage asset at such a steep discount to replacement cost is very attractive, and people understand it. They can rationalize to themselves, yes, this is a good basis play. We're buying at a good price. We feel comfortable with the numbers. And then another way to sanity check this and feel good about it is, okay, our entry is $198,000 per unit. Average rents at the property are $1,825. Okay, that feels good. A lot of us have heard and subscribed to the 1% rule, which means your rents should be 1% of your purchase. And that's typically more of a single family metric, but you can look at it on a multifamily basis as well. You just look at it on a rent per unit per month basis versus a price per unit basis for the multi. Now, I don't think that's a perfect metric because there's so many things at play and there's different expense ratios across the country. So where there's a higher expense ratio, meaning expenses are higher as a percentage of revenue, you're going to need a higher 1% rule, or you're going to need rents that are close to 1% or more. And then if you're in a low expense ratio market, because taxes and insurance might be lower, for example, in Phoenix, well, then you could get away with lower rents relative to the price per door. So it's not perfect, but if you have been looking at deals in your market all the time, like we are in Houston, for example, which this deal is in Houston, you get these metrics, these heuristics, and you get comfortable. You go, oh, wow, this feels like a good buy. 198 a door, 1825 average rents, 2016 vintage, really good location. We've got over 100K median household income in a 1 mile radius. So all these things feel good. But then when you try to underwrite this conventionally, you're upside down. And let's just actually paint that picture so you can understand. So we're entering this deal at a 5.5 cap. And if you know anything about Class A multifamily in Texas, that should stick out to you as a really attractive entry cap rate, because we haven't seen that in many years. So right there off the bat, this feels like a good buy. We're going in at a good cap rate. We're getting a good price per door. The rents are high relative to the price per unit. So everything feels right about this deal. But if you were to go ahead and underwrite this conventionally and expand out the exit cap rate 50 basis points wide of your entry, which would mean we'd underwrite a 6% exit cap rate, I'm going to go over here and look at the returns. The returns are pretty average or weak. You see, it's a 10% net IRR to investors. So how can this make sense? Why can a deal that looks so attractive on paper, you're getting a big discount to the comps, sales comps of the last couple of years, you're getting in at below replacement costs, you're getting in at a high cap rate, why is it that the returns don't look good when you underwrite on a conventional basis, when you're using conventional wisdom? And the reason for it is because of where we are in the market cycle. We are at a cyclically high point in the market, and cap rates are more likely to compress than they are to expand further. Now, of course, I'm making a prediction about the future. So right off the bat, you could say, well, you don't know the future and therefore you're being aggressive. But the problem lies in the fact that this is a consensus that is being baked into the market. We and you are competing against other buyers in the market that are underwriting to cap rate compression, because the market consensus is, yeah, interest rates are at a relative high. Cap rates are at a relative high. And like I said, the likelihood of cap rates compressing is higher than for it to expand further. So as you could see before, the way that we were underwriting this deal was actually not expanding the cap rate 50 basis points wider. We're actually compressing it to 5%, because 5% is much more in line with historical cap rates for this premier product in Houston. Now, I just so happened to use a premier Class A deal, irreplaceable location for this analysis. So I'm not trying to make the argument that you should underwrite every deal with a 5% exit cap rate. That is not what we're doing. We are still looking at deals day in and day out and using 6% exit cap rates for deals where we feel like that is appropriate. And in those deals, we might be entering at a 6.25 cap or a 6.5 cap if we're lucky. The market's gotten competitive even just in the last few weeks. So we're seeing those mid 6 cap deals kind of go away. So the market is getting tight again, and we might have seen peak cap rates already pass. So with this more aggressive quote unquote assumption of 5% exit cap rate, we're able to actually project out really attractive returns, keeping in mind that this is a low risk, irreplaceable real estate type deal. So I know that for many of you, a 15% IRR net to investor may not jump off the page, but for this deal profile and this risk profile, this is a really fantastic return. And this is the beauty and the magic of cap rate compression, which we think is more likely to happen, like I said. So this is the main thing that is different in today's underwriting. And I don't think this is going to last forever. I don't think we're obviously not going to underwrite like this far into the future, because cap rates are going to normalize and this deal is going to trade at a 5.5 cap in 2024. And then that opportunity is going to disappear and this deal will go back most likely, frankly, to be trading in the mid fours as these top of the line deals typically end up trading for. So that's what we're seeing in the market. It takes guts to underwrite this way, because you're going to have a lot of investors not understand. If they're in the business, they're going to think that this is aggressive. So it takes guts to take advantage of a market dislocation like we've seen for the last year or so. And it takes guts to buy at negative leverage. But when you know that you're buying in at a good basis, you're buying at an attractive going in cap rate, and you're getting in below replacement cost, you know that over the long term, things should work themselves out and you should do very well. So it's not easy, but investing and making money is never easy. So this is one of the things that we're seeing in today's market that is very notable as far as underwriting is concerned. Hopefully you found this interesting. Please share this with a friend. If you or a friend of yours is interested in learning more about investing with Lone Star Capital, please reach out either to me or head over to our website, lscre.com, to learn more about partnering with us on our future deals.